is Ice Love Great Radio with Nancy Rothstein.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to I Slept Great Radio, where we take pride in putting our listeners to sleep. Hi, I'm Nancy Rothstein, and I am on a quest to raise awareness about sleep and sleep disorders. And welcome today. Would you believe almost 74% of all Americans do not get enough sleep each night? In fact, the National Sleep Foundation recommends getting 7 to 9 hours a night. Well, I know I'm not doing that most nights. And if you're not getting enough sleep, whether it's quantity or quality, the question is why? And we're here at I Slept Great Radio to help you learn more about sleep and to encourage you to seek answers to make sleep a priority and to get the best sleep you can. In fact, 65% of Americans have sleep problems. They experience them on a regular basis, and either it's just a sleep issue or maybe it's a sleep disorder. Speaking of sleep disorders, today we're going to focus on what's called sleep apnea. And it's a disease, a condition, that affects 20% nearly of the adult population. So if you're wondering what sleep apnea is, we're going to tell you more about it. Believe it or not, 85% of the people who have it are undiagnosed. And it may have significant effects on your health, productivity, relationships, safety, and even more. The good news is that sleep apnea can be diagnosed and treated. And here joining us today to talk about sleep apnea are going to be Dr. Lisa Shives and a patient of hers named Barbara Fargo. And by the way, we'll do our best to entertain any questions you call in with today towards the end of the show. In the meantime, and let me just backtrack just a bit and tell you, there are so many things to talk about when it comes to sleep. And we can just start to cover that today. But we're really lucky to have Dr. Lisa Shives with us. Lisa's a graduate of the University of Chicago Medical School. She completed her internship in internal medicine at Yale University and her residency at Evanston's Northwestern Healthcare. She's board certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Sleep Medicine. So she comes with a lot of experience. I met her recently, and I was very, very impressed with both her knowledge and her commitment to giving patients a much better and healthier night's sleep. Dr. Shives, are you here?
I am. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Well, welcome. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
We've got listeners out there thinking, well, what is this word? What is sleep apnea? They don't even know. So some do, some don't. But what we want to talk about today is really, what is sleep apnea? How would you describe it?
Well, the word apnea comes from the ancient Greek, and it really means no breathing or without breath. So what's happening is when people go to sleep at night, all of us, the muscles in our throats get relatively kind of relaxed and loose and tend to collapse in a little bit. Now, for some people, if you have a really wide open oropharynx, right, fancy word for throat, if your throat is nice and wide, it can accommodate the relaxation of these tissues. But if you have a throat that's just small anatomically, meaning it's just the structure of your throat, this is how you were born, or if you have a throat that's crowded because it has extra tissues, extra tonsillar tissue, or you've gained a lot of weight, and so there's fat pads in your neck that are now holding a lot of fat, and that is crowding the airway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there could be a number of reasons that when when gravity works against you, you lie down, you go to sleep, because when we go to sleep, neurotransmitters that during the day send messages to keep those muscles toned and taut.
You mean like when we're walking around or we're laying flat in an exercise class, but we're not asleep?
Exactly. There's neurotransmitters that are keeping your muscles stiff. And for reasons that we sleep physicians do not understand well, and we don't understand the kind of the evolutionary explanation for why it would be that when we go to sleep, these neurotransmitters turn off, and then these muscles become loose. I mean, probably the explanation is that these neurotransmitters are doing double duty.
Mm-hmm.
they're the same ones who are involved in regulating our wake and our sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then they regulate muscle tone as well. So they turn off, our muscles get loose and flabby, and lo and behold, it's sort of caving in or collapsing in the throat.
Well, does that sort of mean that, you know, people, okay, so they're hearing what sleep apnea is, but what are some of the telltale signs to look for to say, well, wait a minute, you know, what might indicate that somebody has this condition? And then we can get to sort of, well, what does it mean if they do? What's the problem? Why does anybody care?
Sure, sure. So the two big signs or symptoms is that generally a person has a history of snoring, you know, almost every night, and many times you need a bed partner to let you know that, right? A person might not know. And then the person will be very, very tired during the day, sort of for unknown reasons. The classic sleep apnea patient says to me, they love to tell me they have no sleep problem, because they'll say, oh, doc, I have no problem. You know, my head hits the pillow. I can't even, you know, I can't even count to five. I'm asleep immediately. I wake up in the morning. I've slept like the dead for 8 hours. But then they still feel very tired during the day. That's a classic clue to me, because what it is they think they're sleeping like the dead, but they're not. The sleep apnea, I mean, the good news is with sleep apnea is you don't just lie there, have your throat collapse, and die in the middle of the night, right? I mean, people are not doing that. Their brain senses that their oxygen in their blood is decreasing and the CO2 is rising, and the brain says, wake up. So the brain wakes up very briefly. Those muscles in your throat tighten. You take a big gasping breath, typically, and then, and it's all, the wakefulness can be like anywhere between 1 and 15 seconds is typical. So that's not long enough for a patient to remember having awakened.
And so the person's snoring and the person's having all these symptoms, might there be other things? Like I know of patients, and my husband, for example, there's sometimes a gasping for breath that the person's not aware of who's supposedly sleeping well.
Yes. I mean, not only can the person snore, but if the bed partner notices gasping, choking, or, I mean, they can actually tell that the person has stopped breathing, and then often they can see that the person, though, is struggling to breathe, like their chest is heaving, but no air is coming out. These would all be very huge signs, you know, to have the bed partner report to the doctor. I have a separate questionnaire that I ask the patient to give to his or her bed partner, because the information you get from them is really invaluable.
Well, and we've been talking a couple things. We've been talking about this in terms of adults, but, you know, of course, this affects children too, and often I know from the research I've been doing that children are often misdiagnosed with other things, not to go into a huge tangent, but age-wise, this can affect anyone?
Anyone after about the age of 2 or 3, when tonsils actually start to grow. Actually, very little babies can have it too for different reasons. But, you know, people, children who are premature, or they have serious craniofacial abnormalities. But mostly, you don't see sleep apnea in the pediatric population until around the age of 3, 4. And then it's school-aged children from about 3 or 4 up until puberty. You know, once they hit puberty, they have the same risk factors as adults.
Right.
When they're children, it is primarily the tonsils and the adenoids that are the problem.
But really, it's the issue. I mean, we're hearing all the risks and the symptoms, et cetera, but also extremely important is the quality of life and issues that people aren't even aware of, our listeners and beyond, and their friends and family and coworkers, that having sleep apnea undiagnosed is not good because there's other health risks associated.
That's right. So, yeah, I always try to do the two avenues of explanation for why we're going to treat this. And the one is, like you said, what we talked about, that they feel so sleepy during the day. It affects their quality of life. It affects their job, their relationships. And the good news is that's something that when we can fix it, they can feel the difference right away. But then the other avenue of concern is that having sleep apnea night after night, year after year, because as you pointed out, most patients are undiagnosed, so they go undiagnosed for many years with sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
And every time that you stop breathing and then your brain wakes you up, there's a surge in what doctors call the sympathomimetic system.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fancy name for what lay people would call adrenaline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your adrenaline surges, your heart rate increases, your blood pressure increases. All of this is very brief. But if you consider that, you know, many people have apneic episodes, you know, 30, 40, 50, 100 times an hour. And if you are doing this to your heart, this kind of stimulation, it's really like putting yourself through a stress test, you know, multiple times every hour, every night you sleep. And the risk cardiovascularly has been well established now. You have 2 to 3-fold increase in your risk of developing high blood pressure, 2 to 3-fold increased risk of stroke. They're still trying to gather really good data on the increased risk of cardiovascular disease because, you know, you try to sort. Many of the risk factors for sleep apnea are also risk factors for cardiovascular disease, and trying to sort out an independent relationship can be a little tricky.
No, it is quite amazing. It's quite amazing that every person listening and every person on the planet has to get sleep. Maybe we don't all get enough, and maybe the quality is interrupted, but we're just starting to learn all these things, and that's part of the reason we started this radio show, is we want people to be aware of all of these sleep issues, which are so significant. And so it's really, it's very helpful to know this. By the way, I want our listeners to know that they're going to certainly want to get some more information. And if you go to www.isleptgreat.com, is a great website to learn about all kinds of sleep issues. And if you want to know per today specifically about sleep apnea, and I'll repeat this again later, go to www.sleepapnea.org, which is the American Sleep Apnea Association, or to www.mydaddysnores, which approaches this from a family perspective. So because this is a family issue, certainly that telltale sign of snoring is something that can affect a whole family or roommates or whatever else. So that's important. But most importantly, you're pointing out to people that this is, if these signs, these symptoms are there, you need to do something about them. You need to be proactive and talk to your physician or a sleep physician to get diagnosed and treated.
Yes.
And speaking of diagnosis and treatment, we have on the air, and I'm sure you'll have more medical things as well to tell us, Dr. Shives. We have on the line one of Dr. Shives' happy patients, Mrs. Barbara Fargo, who will tell us a little bit about her story and what led her to recognize that there might be something to be explored more. Barbara, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Dr. Shives is on the line as well, so you can certainly interact. Tell us a little bit about what led you to Dr. Shives.
Well, basically my internist.
Mm-hmm.
I was experiencing increasing fatigue to the point where, you know, it was just really hard to stay awake at any time in the 24 hours of a day. And I went to him with that complaint. And he ruled out several other things. And actually, finally, at the end of all of this, there is a condition that I do have that also increases sleepiness or fatigue, increases fatigue. But he did suggest that I go to see Dr. Shives.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And it was really astonishing because you begin by staying there overnight with the CPAP machine attached to you.
And we'll talk, listeners, we'll talk a little bit more about what a CPAP machine is. But so you went in for a sleep study, it's called.
Yeah, right. At his suggestion.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that. What was that like?
Well, the astonishing thing was that I really was less fatigued the next day. I mean, markedly less fatigued. And even as a best result, I didn't expect immediate results. So that was the thing that really was most striking. That just one night of better sleep, of the correct kind of sleep, which I may not have this quite right, but I believe that I was not getting enough REM sleep, and just one night with the REM sleep as a result of using the CPAP machine, I just had an entirely different day. I just had much, much more energy and staying power.
Let me just say one thing to our listeners. Often when you go in for a sleep study overnight, and Dr. Shiva can address this as well, you are tested. You are not treated the first night. That night, you're there trying to get an assessment of your sleep to see if you actually have a sleep disorder, in particular, in this case, sleep apnea. And so you may not get the use of, and Dr. Shiva will tell us more about it, of this a piece of equipment, this medical device that helps cure sleep apnea and helps with cure it in the sense that it takes away the risk, the problem that's causing the lack of air through the airways. So this was a case where she was treated. Some people don't get the actual treatment that first night, and so I want you to be aware. But what was so compelling about Barbara's story was that she saw the results immediately. Dr. Shives, do you want to address what a CPAP is and a little bit about the sleep study?
Sure. So, now, Barbara, if you remember, we actually did do a two-night workup.
Yeah, but I felt the difference with those workups, which I understood were diagnostic rather than being treatment.
Right. The first night that you came in, it was diagnostic. So, you know, we put little electrodes all over people's heads, and some have to reside on their face, and their sensors that sit near their nose, their mouth. We measure the oxygen in their blood throughout the study. We measure their heart, you know, via the EKG. We can tell. We have belts around their chest and abdomen to see if they are not breathing. We'd like to know, are they actually trying to breathe, or has their brain just kind of turned off all signals, which is a rarer type of apnea called central apnea. But with obstructive apneas, we can tell that they're actually struggling to breathe. Then we also measure whether they're kicking their legs a lot during the night. It's a separate disorder. So you come in, you get all hooked up, takes about 30 to 60 minutes. You get into bed. You are able to be unhooked at any moment and go to the bathroom. That's not an issue.
Yeah.
And actually,
it's similar, really. It's not the same, but it's similar to an EKG. You sort of get all these little parts all over you.
Exactly.
And when you went home and you were on your own with this treatment, oh, by the way, do you want to, Lisa, talk a little bit about what a CPAP is?
Okay, so CPAP, which is an acronym, it's four letters, C-P-A-P, and it stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. So it's very important that people understand that this is not oxygen therapy. This is really, the beauty of this treatment is, technically speaking, it's very simple, very low tech. It is pressurized room air that's put into the back of your throat either via a small mask that goes over your nose or little tubes that sit inside your nose. Or sometimes people, you know, have a style that goes over the nose and the mouth. And you put this pressurized air into the back of the throat, and it acts as a pneumatic stent, okay, or splint. We are literally just putting air pressure in the throat so that those muscles that tend to get loose and flabby and want to collapse in on themselves, they can't do it now because the air pressure is holding them back.
Hmm.
And that's what a CPAP is.
Very interesting.
And the thing that I always stress with CPAP is as far as a medical modality or treatment goes, the beauty of it is it really can't hurt you.
Right. I've heard it's 100% effective and zero risk.
Exactly.
And it's quite remarkable. I mean, it's an extraordinary, an extraordinary discovery that this was the issue. Believe me, what did it take till the mid-70s to really even diagnose what sleep apnea was and then to figure out how to cure it?
Yes. I mean, researchers in Europe were describing sleep apnea in the 60s, and it really didn't make it to this country until the 70s. People have always had it, although the growing obesity problem in this country and other sort of industrialized countries does add to it, although I would like to say that I think the demographic profile of the sleep apnea patient is changed. We in the field are realizing that it's changed, that it's not just the chubby middle-aged man, which is how people always thought of the sleep apnea patient. Because if you think about how I explained, you know, the problem with the tissues being close together in the throat,
right.
Is if you just have a small throat, everything's going to be much closer together, and you're going to have a tendency towards sleep apnea.
No, that is so important that you brought that up, because that typical, people think of a snoring person for the most part, somebody who's heavier, they're overweight, they've been, and it's certainly drinking before bed can somewhat make those muscles relax more.
Yes, it does.
And that was an image people had, but I have met through my work just tons of people who are tall, thin, and, you know, whatever their age, end up with sleep apnea and have been misdiagnosed with all kinds of other things because nobody thought that this was what possibly was the problem.
Yes. I mean, I had a 37-year-old woman come to me just at her wit's end. She was actually crying in my office. As if anyone listening has ever been sleep deprived, especially if you're a woman, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You can get so tired that you just want to weep. So this woman is at her wit's end with her sleepiness and her fatigue, and she had even suggested to her primary care physician that could this be sleep apnea? And she was immediately dismissed, just told that, you know, a youngish, thin woman like yourself, no, it's impossible. And I found, you know, not even borderline sleep apnea. I mean, she had, you know, moderate sleep apnea, which means 15 to 20 events per hour where her throat was closing. And now that she's using CPAP, it's just night and day how much better she feels.
Well, you know, and also, Barbara, you said to me something, you said a quote, and if you want to repeat it, about what this did for you that was so astonishing, that your energy level went so far up. You said it was like as if you got your life back.
Well, yeah, I'm 78 years old, and it was like shedding 15 years overnight.
Wow.
I'm also, to some extent, a skeptical person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I didn't expect immediate results. I was absolutely astonished.
And so what happened those first days you were home? You know, you'd gone to this, you were exhausted all the time, you didn't know why. Now you're wearing the CPAP. What was it like to wake up? Tell us what it felt like.
Well, for one thing, it was easier to wake up. I mean, I wasn't laying in bed thinking, oh, you know, I've got to roll out of here and get started. And I didn't go through this at about 10 in the morning, just being so totally exhausted, I couldn't think about anything but lying down somewhere and getting my legs up.
Did you have to drink a lot of caffeine to stay up?
I don't do that.
You just pushed yourself through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you walk? Do you exercise? Do you walk a lot? Or
yeah, exercise has always helped me. Mm-hmm. Always, it peps me up a little. And I really have not added any exercise.
But what you're doing is easier once you have this new energy.
Sorry?
You had more vigor to do whatever you do to work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could get through my planned day with much greater ease and without this constant dragging myself through it and pushing myself. It wasn't an ordeal to have a good day.
Wow. And how about being feeling alert, like if you were reading?
Well, that's it. That is I would notice it, for instance, driving the car because I was getting to, and also the age factor. Because of my age, I was beginning to think, oh, my God, I'm just going downhill much faster than I ever expected to go downhill.
Wow.
I would think, when I got into the car. Now, I've got to concentrate. I've got to be careful. And it took away those feelings. You know, I felt capable.
Wow. You know, believe it or not, it's despite the age and the fatigue. Do you know 1 in 3 people from statistics from the National Sleep Foundation a few weeks ago, they had something called the Sleep in America poll. 1 in 3 people drive drowsy at least once a month.
That's probably true.
And
yeah.
you can really relate to that because you see the difference now.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
truthfully, a lot of those people probably, you know, 20% of the adult population has sleep apnea and 85% are undiagnosed. So there you go with some of those drowsy drivers.
Right.
So it's just, it's so exciting to hear that something, you know, can be cured so easily. You know, Dr. Shives is telling us that that's the thing about sleep apnea. You know, it's not untreatable. It's not a disease that you have to sit and think, oh, my God, this I'm stuck with for the rest of my life. You just have to get up and do something about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And, you know, I want to point go back to something Barbara was saying that I want your listeners to know, that I do think, you know, sleep apnea does increase as we get older. You know, the prevalence rates increase. But that doesn't mean that you have to accept it, as we said, since there is treatment. And I'm afraid that many people, as they get older, the symptoms of sleep apnea, the fatigue, the cognitive clouding, et cetera, you know, they accept, they think, oh, this is because I'm getting old. And so the big message, which I think is a huge trend in medicine in the last 30, 40, 50 years, is that so many things that were attributed to old age,
mm-hmm.
you know, for 2,000 years, we start to find biological explanations that they're actually a disease entity that can be treated and not something that you just have to accept as being part of getting older.
You know, that's so well said. I was speaking to a senior executive who said, as we were talking about sleeping issues, he said, I think I probably have that, but some things you learn to live with. Those were his actual words. And I said, no, some things you get diagnosed and treated so that you can live.
Right, right.
And so, yes, I'm so happy. You're right. I think that was so well put. And I think that the explanations are there, and we're hearing a testimonial from somebody whose life was given, you know, as she said, I just love those words, I got my life back. And
right.
I think that's just so crucial. Anything else either of you want to add before we close for today?
I think just that basic message that sleep apnea is very prevalent and very treatable, and that you can feel the difference right away. And that
as we said, please go to www.isleptgreat.com or MyDaddySnores.com. In both cases, you can get to identification of doctors you can speak, find sleep doctors who can help you assess this, or someone you care about who seems to have the symptoms and no longer remain in denial that this is just something that you have to live with, because if you really want to live well, you need to have this taken care of.
Right.
And I'd like to thank Dr. Shives, and I'd like to thank Barbara Fargo for being with us today. It's been wonderful to have you on. I hope the listeners are really hearing what you have to say. Most importantly, that this is something that you can take care of and that it's treatable. And one thing we didn't get a chance to cover today is there are other approaches to treating sleep apnea besides CPAP, although it is the most effective and easiest in many ways. Well, I won't say easiest, but it's certainly effective. But there are other types of treatments. And on the websites that we gave, you can find that there as well. And so thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Nancy.
And thank you to our listeners. Thank you, Barbara.
Yes, you're welcome.
And
thank you so much
for
focusing on this important topic.
Yes, we are. There's so much more to say about it. So if you or someone you know is showing signs of sleep apnea, please discuss the symptoms with your physician or a sleep specialist. And we know that your health care and well-being can be improved significantly. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next on April 2nd with more information about great sleep and how to get it. And if anybody has any call-ins, we can answer one or two questions. But thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, ladies. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So here we say goodbye to you today from I Slept Great Radio. We wish you a great day and wonderful sleep.